Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Expert, Solving Skilled Workforce Challenges. My name is Matthew Jaster, Senior Editor at Power Transmission Engineering and Gear Technology Magazines. This episode of Ask the Expert is sponsored by Forest City Gear. Since 1955, Roscoe, Illinois-based family-owned Forest City Gear has been one of the gear industry's leading sources for the development, manufacture, and inspection of the highest quality gears. By committing to excellence without exception, Forest City Gear's fine and medium pitch custom gears are trusted worldwide in everything from telescopes to tractors, artificial elbows to aircraft, military lasers, medical examining tables, printers, race cars, power tools to dental drills. They've even found on the International Space Station and the Mars Exploration Rovers. Whether you're looking to source one-of-a-kind precision gears or high-volume production, we invite you to learn why the world turns by visiting forestgear.com. Before we begin our discussion on solving skilled workforce challenges, I'd like to give each panelist an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Chris Ward, Senior Director of Strategy and Business Development for SME, Society of Manufacturing Engineers. I've been in the workforce space for about 17 years. And now I'm really working to weave workforce through everything that SME does, along with supporting organizations with technology adoption as well.
I'm Kika Young, president at Forest City Gear and part of the third generation of the family at Forest City Gear. I started part-time when I was 19, and what I spent the first 10 years or so of my career focused on was human resources and staffing. So I'm excited to go through these topics today.
Hi, good afternoon. My name's Mary Ellen Doran. I actually wear two hats for AGMA. I'm the Director of Emerging Technology, but I'm also the Executive Director of the AGMA Foundation, and we work to raise money to give scholarships for budding manufacturers and manufacturing engineers.
Good afternoon, I'm Megan Schrauben with the Michigan Department of Education. Michigan Department of Education and the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. I'm the MyStem Network Executive Director, and it's a statewide service connecting K-12 education to business and industry.
Thank you all for being here today. Let's get right into it. Let's just solve the workforce challenges today, right? What tools and resources are essential to help solve workforce development challenges in manufacturing today?
You know, I've thought about this question a lot since you sent them out. And I don't know that it's so much the tools and resources, because there's a lot of tools out there, there's a lot of resources out there. The workforce system is extraordinarily difficult for manufacturers to navigate. And we think it's one of the biggest challenges, because you have an educational system, you have a workforce system, you have community-based organizations, and so many organizations that are doing wonderful things. It's really difficult to identify what are the right programs, what are the right partners, and there's resources that are needed to help better coordinate that, both locally, but also to take those local successes and scale them nationally, so that we're not recreating the wheel every time a new initiative comes out. You can just take, augment, and scale. So I think there's a lot out there. It's the system needs to really kind of bring itself together more effectively to support manufacturers today.
I totally agree with that, yeah. For example, in the area that we're in, most of the local high schools have some STEM and some manufacturing programs, which is great. And we support those and are very active in the development of some of those new ones. What's frustrating to us is we're within 10 or 15 miles of 15 different school districts, seven of whom are doing a great job on this, but they're not connected to each other at all. So we have to have redundancy in what we're doing in order to support the different organizations. And that's just the schools. There's a ton of other programs too. So it can be difficult to navigate. The tool that's most important for us is determining what partnerships make the best sense for us, which again can be work in of itself. But once you find those partnerships and you find that continuing education program, there are some great people in this room today exhibiting that help provide some of that education, including AGMA itself. Just being consistent with getting your workforce available for that repeatedly, those types of schooling and education.
Well, I think one thing we need to do is make it simpler. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we're not reinventing the wheel. We're not making people jump through 4 and 5 hoops. The AGMA Foundation has a toolkit for manufacturers that they can download, slap their logo on, and go out to a workforce event and be able to have information about the gear industry at their fingertips so they don't have to do it themselves. We make sure that when we get a student who is awarded a scholarship, that school is aware that we have a scholarship program. So we have a couple of universities that have 4 and 5 and 6 students that have received scholarships from us as a matter. So it's making it simpler, building those lines of communication, and getting as many kids as we can into the workforce.
I'll just add to that. I think part of the reason my STEM was created in the first place was to try to scale, like you mentioned, Chris, but also to scale those best practices that we are seeing, right? So that you don't have to connect with every single school separately. That's what hopefully a regional director would help to know, all the different assets that are available in that local community. But I think another piece we need to really consider is that we tend to think our short-term needs. And so a lot of our programming is focused at high school or just after graduation. And how do we really think about how we become part of the community and engage with educators early on in a child's life? So it really does two things, right? It allows the community to be more aware of what that company does, but also to potentially see that company as a valued member of their community. Right? So then we've got that longer term plan of keeping that local community engagement. Mm-hmm.
Can you Thank grab you.
I have something in my throat. Right back.
Mm-hmm. What are some successful strategies for manufacturers to attract and retain a more diverse workforce?
That's a great question. I think there's two things. One, the manufacturer has to be first and foremost willing to address their culture. Because as you look at diverse populations, as you look at groups such as the Justice Involved, people who are uniquely abled or neurodivergent, you cannot bring individuals into an organization and expect it to be business as usual. So the first thing that has to happen is a company's got to commit to making an inclusive environment. And then finding those organizations, again, finding groups that can make those connections for you. State of Michigan has an absolutely wonderful CTE program within the justice system. I've had the privilege of actually visiting the Jackson State Prison. Their CTE programming is so amazing. They only have, I think the last time I looked, was a 6% recidivism rate. And you look nationally, that recidivism rate is probably 10 times, if not more than that. So there are wonderful pockets of opportunity of bringing people in to the manufacturing sector. It's, again, a challenge in the system to find those organizations that can help you connect those dots, because I can imagine as a manufacturer, yes, I want to go work with the Justice Involved, but help me figure out what I need to do with my culture. You know, I want to work with folks who are uniquely abled. Help me with that. And you need organizations, and it's a lot of what SME has been spending an awful lot of time on the past couple of years, is trying to make those connections and helping organizations bring that talent in as part of their attraction strategy in helping manufacturers in general find those new pools of talent.
And building off what Chris said, you have to look at the retention part of the equation too. Once you get them in the door, once they figure out what the job is, you need to figure out what their needs are on an individual basis. It's not all money for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's time off, it's flexibility, it's getting feeling like they belong and are part of the workforce and the team that is working on the shop floor.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go back to my earlier answer too, right? Is thinking earlier on of when you might capture students, right? So research shows that basically students make up their mind of whether they even belong in that particular career field by 3rd or 4th grade, right? So what we're talking about is how do we get in front of them or engage with their families at an earlier level, right? And that can just be opening your space to host like a family STEM night or something, right? And it's being very intentional about the employees that you put in front of those students, right? So that they see people who are just like them in that space, right? So agree with everything that's been said here, but also how do we get in front of them at the earlier ages where they're essentially already being shown pictures of what's possible and what careers they potentially belong in?
Great. What role does personality, geography, and opportunity play in an employee's decision development process, and how can organizations keep in-house skilled talent long-term?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll focus on the retention side of it. 100% agree with the comments about retention and making sure people see clear career pathways, getting into job progression programs, because someone coming in the door is not going to be at the same talent or skill level as someone who's been with the organization for 30 years. And you're going to have to create those pathways to help them upskill so that, one, you're ensuring you're going to have the skills long term as an employer, but also that it becomes that mutual relationship between the employee and employer, where that employee now is going to be a lifelong learner. So now you've got to think about things like cybersecurity. You've got to think about maybe things about, you know, data collection. Maybe, you know, the OEMs you're supplying are asking for things that you're not prepared for yet. You need someone who's able to learn to build those skills so that you can respond to those market conditions. So I'll talk on that retention point.
Yeah, the retention is a big part for us as well. We have a very, very low turnover rate amongst employees. As long as they make it past the first 2 years, then our turnover is very, very low. But retaining your talent is important, especially in a close and competitive industry like we're in. Most people aren't quitting their job, right? They're quitting the people at their job. The majority of us spend more time with the people that we're at work with than we do with our own families, our spouses, our kids. So making sure that you're reflecting the values that are going to keep people with you is really important to us at Forest City Gear. We have a list of core values that are truly important to us, and the very first one is families matter and always will. So we know that we're not our employees' family. Their family is at home. They're working to support their family. So being able to be flexible with folks when they're going through a difficult period in their lives or when they need help is a big part of retaining our workforce. And just making it not a place that they hate going into every day, right?
If I could build on with what you were just saying, I think it would be really great. So MyStem in general, our message to the state is that project problem, place-based, really authentic, real-world ways of solving problems in the world is what actually engages students in their learning, right? So moving away from like a siloed textbook approach, a primary way that we probably all learned in school, and having it be much more like working with the company next door and saying, what problems are you working on? And then embedding all of your curricular standards within that. So that's really what we are trying to support communities in doing. In terms of employee retention, what we've seen in some of these programs is really that piece of how am I feeling a part of my community, right? So are you providing incentives for your employees to have volunteer hours in their local community, right? It may be their child's classroom that they get to go speak to, right, or bring a problem to. One of the really successful programs that we've seen in one of our communities is like a fourth grade engineering design challenge every single year, and basically the science and the ELA teachers work together, so the English language arts teachers work together on these problems, and then the manufacturing groups are actually building prototypes of what the students are designing, right? And the manufacturers, what we're hearing from them is that their employees are saying, this is like the highlight of my year. We are going to continue to be engaged in this every single year because they're seeing the excitement from the young people of their designs come to life, right? So you're not only building the potential future workforce, but you're also helping to retain your current workforce. So yeah. Those integrated opportunities, right? And just thinking about how can we actually help our employees be part of their local community?
And when people have positive things to say about where they work, they're saying it to their friends who may need jobs. They're saying it to their friends that may end up working right alongside them. And that grows into a community of people that you know and people that you want to go to work and see every day.
Great. How are today's grade school, high school, and college students better prepared for the data-driven analytics approach to manufacturing and business today?
I don't know that they are. truly. You know, I sit on the Industry Advisory Council for the Accreditation Board for Engineering and Technology, and just came off meetings a couple weeks ago. Some of the things we're talking about is just that, especially at the undergraduate level, because that's the majority of employees at a four-year school that'll come out. What I see are some wonderful things, though, that are starting, and I can speak to programs that SME does. We have a prime program called Partnership Response in Manufacturing Education, where we work with the school, we work with the manufacturers in a community to bring career and technical education in manufacturing and engineering with a relatively low lift for the school. Not a no lift, but a lower lift, including the teacher training, equipment, resources. But more importantly, as industry is evolving, we're evolving the curriculum, aligning that curriculum to state standards, but incorporating things like, how do you use Excel to really analyze data? So if you're in a CNC or a machining program, you're getting data off that piece of equipment. How are you taking it out and doing some analytics to understand what's happening and making that connection so that as those students keep moving on, they can then kind of bridge back to that learning some of the new things that they might have to do when they are on the job in the workforce. So those are just examples, but it's really about that integrated education that needs to happen and kind of that interdisciplinary education that needs to start occurring more frequently.
Chris, I'm really glad that you went first on that one because I was essentially going to say I'm not sure they are either, right? Because in my life, essentially, again, we're trying to move it to be more integrated, but really trying to help. If speaking as a trained educator, former high school teacher, if I hadn't seeked out those opportunities to actually like see where what I was being asked to teach was actually applied in the real world, I wouldn't have had those examples. I would have only known textbook math, right? I would have only known textbook physics. And so what we are trying to design are opportunities for the educators to actually see what industry, you know, have some sort of industry learning experience, right? So that you start to see, oh my gosh, right? Like, look what they are doing. And there's some really exciting problems that the world is trying to solve, right? And I think there's also, you know, when we talk about even coming out of the pandemic and the social emotional health of a lot of our communities, not just our students coming out of that pandemic, by bringing these problems in and helping students and educators see that they could actually be part of solving that, it actually puts more hope into that system as well. So I think there's a ray of light that we're trying to head in that direction, but I don't, maybe coming out of college, but definitely not out of K-12, right? We're literally at the point of trying to help schools understand that we should be teaching computer science. It should be just as important as the other core areas that you look at. But having conversations with them about everything that you're being asked to teach is actually important for a well-rounded education, and you shouldn't just be cutting the arts programs because you're trying to jam something else in. Right? So those integrated real-world examples actually help us to be much more effective and efficient in our education system.
Well said.
I've seen some successful incubator positions. My son was in his grade school. They had a fantastic robotics program that was integrated where they taught the instructors how to use them first. They spent a year so all the teachers knew what they were doing. And then they utilized there were kids leaving fifth grade knowing how to code in Python and using it in art class and using it in science class. Mm-hmm. I wish to see more of that. Mm-hmm. And he was a public school and it was a trial run and then it died and it didn't continue. So yep. We need more of those to exist and build on them.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Exactly that.
What incentive programs and recruitment tools are available specifically for gear manufacturers today?
I can't speak to gear manufacturing specifically, because what gear manufacturers are facing is what every manufacturer is facing. You know, there's a lot of funding out there for, and I'll talk incumbent workforce or net new to industry workforce, because even though we're talking about pipelines of talent and building that K-12 system, there are so many hidden populations and so many underserved, underrepresented groups that if a manufacturer is willing to take that risk to address things in their culture, take a risk in working with very, very talented people and bringing them into your organization, there is so much funding out there to help you do just that. Whether it's federal dollars, state dollars, you have the Manufacturing Extension Partnership System that can help navigate that. You have economic development agencies that can help navigate some of that. So the resources are out there. I will go back to the point, though, sometimes manufacturers don't know where to look. And doing a better job at highlighting those resources is absolutely critical.
So Forest City Gear is in Illinois, and there are several both state mm-hmm. and I think partially federally mm-hmm. funded programs available for workforce development and workforce training. Wherever you are, there is almost certainly a local partnership or extension office mm-hmm. that you can contact to get those dollars. And sometimes those dollars can be a lot of dollars mm-hmm. That you're eligible for reimbursement for training, yep. Both on the job and outside training, bringing in trainers. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, anything that is connected to government dollars is not going to be an easy thing to do paperwork-wise, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, application after application. But those local extension offices will really help you mm-hmm. Navigate that and make it easier for you. And it truly is a good way to take advantage of some of that. There are also a lot of private organizations like the AGMA that has different scholarships and funding available and resources that we as a company, you know, wouldn't be able to develop on our own, but through a greater organization like the AGMA, we can rely on that a little bit better.
So, and that's what we do. But additionally, we've seen a lot of our members that are going into universities and helping with project-based mm-hmm. learning. There's not a lot of gear training in universities right now. They may touch gears for a quarter of one of their manufacturing classes over the course of their four-year education or six-year education, depending on whether they have internships. We have companies that are now moving into a position to help with some of these bigger programs, whether it's building robots or building cars or building vehicles that are solving a certain problem. They work with the students hands-on to be able to cut the gears and figure out the gears that are necessary for the transmissions and the drive lines for those vehicles. So there are some opportunities that we're starting to see for gear manufacturing specifically.
Yep. And I know I'm speaking specific for Michigan, right? But there are other state or community-wide STEM networks or STEM mm-hmm. ecosystems that exist in other states. But we in Michigan specifically already, like all the government, you know, grant paperwork, I take care of that just with the region that I go out into, right? And then the region itself would be working with you in order to either match funds, right, or other resources and say, what's the incentive to get the educator in the door? So that then they can offer that project-based learning experience, and then you would ideally want to attach that then to, you have an internship opportunity or an apprenticeship, you know, and there are different again, state government funds that help connect to those resources, right? But I think the biggest thing is how do you connect those two things mm-hmm. together?
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about how can small job shops compete in the hiring process with larger organizations that offer more benefits, greater salaries, and other perks?
Getting a job in a large organization is difficult. The one thing that can differentiate you locally is, one, you're local. It's not going to require relocation. Number two, your culture. Really making that inclusive environment. And there's a lot of intangibles in there. You know, we do, we have a learning services organization that actually consults with companies, and we're doing a lot of work right now with a lot small and mid-sized manufacturers to help them come up with flexible work schedules. I mean, there's very inexpensive and simple software that can help with that, but training an organization to rethink how you run shifts so that you can accommodate people who, you know, they might be a single parent. They might have a spouse that works an off shift and there's a lot of childcare. They might be taking care of an aging parent. They might have health concerns. You know, you want to have that inclusive environment. And some of that is rethinking the nature of work in manufacturing. Yes, there are production deadlines. There's a lot of ways to shift share. So really thinking outside the box, out of that traditional, you know, 8 hour, 9 hour, 12 hour shift, three set shifts is kind of where the industry is starting to move towards. And a small and mid-sized company actually probably has more flexibility to do it than maybe a large organization managing hundreds and hundreds of people. So it's just one way, but a lot of it has to do with culture and being innovative and really thinking differently about the nature of what and how the work happens.
Yeah, so this is a very real problem for us at Forest City Gear. We have two companies within about 12 miles of us that are large publicly traded companies that are competing very directly for the same exact workforce. Yeah. And we don't win every time, right? I mean, I had an operator who was doing a good job who was offered $7 an hour more by one of these companies down the road. Plus a $7,000 sign-on bonus. Mm-hmm. So as a small job shop that's privately held, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I can't be as compelling as far as a salary as some of these bigger companies can go. I can show them our history, and I can say, hey, the minute they get slow, you're going to get laid off. We will almost certainly not lay you off, right? Mm-hmm. Our family is going to make concessions to our own salaries before we're going to touch your family's stability. Mm-hmm. And so part of that culture, work flexibility, we do those things. Again, once folks are with Forest City Gear and they pass that two-year mark, our turnover rate is very, very low. I think partially because of the culture and there's some flexibility. But it is a very difficult thing because money talks, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when these larger corporations can really be competitive, you know, sometimes it doesn't give people a choice.
Yeah,
right. We've seen some instances where the application of some simple IoT solutions assisted people in having more ownership over their own key role in the process of making gears. So they understand what their downtime is on their machine and the downtime of the guy next to them. There's a little bit of competition back and forth. There's a lot of overlap and assistance in bringing the numbers up so that as a unit, you're able to grow and build and possibly get a bonus and possibly get more work in the door and more time on your machine, because as you're able to develop the skills and understand what's happening on your machine, you're able to do a better job. So it's instilling a sense of ownership for that person in the role that they have, that it's not just a plug-and-play job that they don't really have to think about, giving them some tools and some reason to be there and be productive during the day.
The only piece I would add to that, I mean, these are all really sound HR, you know, and company practices. Again, I would go back to how do you open your doors to the community so that the young people see you, right? And you are seen as a valued member of the community, but also, you know, when we've seen this project-based learning type piece come through, I'm not going to name the community in northern rural Michigan, right? But the comments from the students were, we used to think of this town as old, cold, and boring. Now we see the breadth of opportunities that are here, right? Mm-hmm. So just think about how, you know, a lot of our buildings maybe don't have windows on them, right? Like you can't tell what's going on in that space, right? Or maybe it's in a business park. Like you have no idea that it exists, right? So how you can think about ways that you open your doors to the community so that people actually see the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Can I add one more? You have to go to them too. Like TikTok is a real thing.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to use the tools that your potential employees use on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. TikTok is hard for me, but it's something that you really need to think about when you're thinking about a holistic way of changing the way that you pursue employment.
And that's a great project-based learning thing for your students mm-hmm. to actually design for you and your company. So.
Exactly.
My parents just joined Snapchat, so I'm a little concerned. But. All right. Are people, systems, and processes keeping pace with the technology trends that are changing our world daily? What more can we do as a community to keep up with these trends?
They're not. We see it all the time. You see this challenge of, smart manufacturing adoption is slow, right? We don't have the talent to make it happen. There also has to be that business case, that payback, the ROI, and proving that some of these new technologies are better, more efficient, more effective than the traditional technologies. We just had an additive manufacturing summit last week with thinkers and doers trying to identify what's preventing that adoption, and that's one of the number one findings with any new technology. The other piece is, as new technologies are coming out, building that workforce pipeline is critical, but it doesn't mean that there's going to be an exact job for that technology. We see this in a number of them, that developing that multi-skilled worker is absolutely essential. So that your machinist, if you're going to get into 3D printing, they can, if you have a little downtime, they're the ones that are running the printer. That cross-training, that upskilling is absolutely essential. And then using automation as, a stopgap solution, great efficiency, but it takes a lot of different skills to program a robot, to maintain a robot, than it does to cut metal. So having that flexibility, investing in people is absolutely critical, and then pushing it through the talent pipeline, connecting competitions to what kind of careers could result from them. We see that as a huge gap as well. So there's just a lot of things that need to kind of come together to change that messaging for both the attraction side and getting people interested, but also to support that technology adoption side, because that kid coming out of a competition who made that great battle bot, maybe just that same person, if you can make the connection for them, is going to help you automate your facility.
So, technology is hard, and figuring out how to implement technology is hard. Mm-hmm. So if I have a catalog with 10 part numbers and I'm making, 1,000 of each a day, right, I've got repeatable processes, and it's really easy to lay the technology out across those processes and figure out mm-hmm. something when you're doing it on a repeating mm-hmm. basis. But I don't have that luxury, right? I'm a job shop. So I understand the pros of a certain type of software or cobot or robotic mm-hmm. arm or machine measuring tool, right? But is that really enough mm-hmm. value add for me? Mm-hmm. So what we have found at Forest City Gear, if we're looking at a type of technology, there are a ton of guys, a lot of them are in this room, selling that technology, okay? And they want you to buy their technology. So going to them and saying, hey, you've got this machine monitoring software. I don't totally understand how it would really create enough value add for me as a job shop to implement that. They want to make it work for you, right? I mean, they're very motivated to get that to work for you. So they might come in and put it on some of your machines mm-hmm. for free for 6 months to let you try it. Same with mm-hmm. really any type mm-hmm. of technology. They're very interested, the guys who are creating and selling this technology and making it work for you. So just mm-hmm. asking them, right. I mean, they want to help you figure it out.
So I'm going to put my emerging technology hat on for a second. 6 years ago, we committed to solve some of these issues for the gear manufacturing mm-hmm. Community. We go out and do some of the research. We connect. We have a monthly webinar series. We have 4 very active committees who are looking into IoT, 3D, robotics, and what did I miss? IoT, 3D, robotics, and electric vehicle technology. Mm-hmm. And we are bringing, specifically through a gear-centric viewpoint, what can you do in your shop in these areas? And here are some use, here are some cases where people were successful and what they did and how they did it. And if that's reflective of what you do in your shop, maybe you want to try this particular thing. The other piece of it is, if you walk around the show floor, so many of these vendors are out in front of technology. The software that they have on their systems are checking things and are doing what they're supposed to do to assist manufacturers. So I know that these machines are expensive, but the machine tool company is doing right by the gear community in staying ahead of the curve in what's necessary for some of those tools to be already in the machinery as it's coming across the door into the shop floor.
You didn't mention that those are free webinars that people can
watch. Oh, the webinars are free.
I might just add, just a good educational practice in general is pairing, teaming, right? How are, even thinking intergenerationally, right, on those teams. Sending individuals to conferences, right? But switching those teams up regularly so that they're constantly helping to train and upskill other members of your team. Right? So valuing that as part of your culture, right? And that's what we try to do in the classroom, right? And it works in the workforce too.
Mm-hmm. All right, one more here. What skills and capabilities do you believe will be most critical in manufacturing moving forward?
A lot. Not to sound funny about it, but we don't know. There are skills that are going to be needed 5 years from now that we haven't even thought about. Right now, the hot topic is AI, machine learning, you know, data analytics, cybersecurity, connecting OT and IT, you know, very, very hot. But as those evolve, emerge, and the talent base catches up, that next thing is going to be coming really fast behind. And really what we need is that philosophy of being lifelong learners. We're experimenting with we actually got a DARPA award to look at AI applications and educational technology and taking people's skills, marrying them up with job roles and job role requirements, seeing what jobs people might qualify for, but also helping them build out a learning pathway for potential future jobs that are coming down the pipe and connecting them to learning programs that can help them keep that skill set current, relevant to get that next job or to get that next thing their employer might need. So there are emerging technologies that are coming out that are also going to help that lifelong learner, as well as the employers, as these skills are constantly changing.
So it's a little corny, but my dad always used to say, we're going to look for the three A's in an employee. So the first one is aptitude, mm-hmm. right? They don't have to have the skill. I can teach them the skill, but do they have the capability of learning that skill? Do they have the aptitude needed to be able to learn? Mm-hmm. And the second is attitude. Do they want to learn? Are they nice? Are they going to be a good coworker? Are they going to fit our culture? Mm-hmm. Right? We talked earlier, you spend more time with the people you work with than the people you live with a lot of the times. I don't want the guy working next to me to be a jerk all day, right? I don't want to, that stinks. Who wants that? Nobody wants that. So aptitude, can they learn? Attitude, will they learn? And can they be a decent mm-hmm. human being about it? And the third one, seems so basic, but in today's age, it's maybe our biggest difficulty in its attendance. Just show up.
Yeah.
Just come to work and don't mm-hmm. ghost me.
It's very true. Those are both really fantastic answers to this question. I might take it in a little bit of a different direction. There's so many new things coming at employees at manufacturing plants that to some degree, they just need to be good at their job. And they need to develop and understand, like, we need gear manufacturers. We need gear designers. We need people that understand when the gear mesh happens, whether or not it's right. We can't rely on the technology itself. We also need the manpower to understand those pieces. When it comes to new technology, my biggest fear is electricity. We're putting all of this effort into AI, which is a big electric suck. We're putting all of this effort into cars, which will be electric vehicles. So are we thinking about generating enough electricity, clean electricity, to be able to, 20 years from now, support all of these things we're talking about? So I just wanted to add those points.
I would just add the human element, right? Just as humans, we thrive on social connections, and all of our earlier answers are really around the culture of the community that you are establishing. And so, you know, kind of to your point of the attitude, the technologies are always going to be changing, right? And if you're willing to learn and take advantage of those opportunities, right? But we really need to remember our human abilities, mm-hmm. right? How to be humans.
Do we have any questions from the audience? Going once, going twice?
Nope.
I'd like to thank all of our panelists for joining us today and sharing their knowledge and expertise. And once again, I'd like to give a special thanks to 4City Gear for sponsoring today's event.